Soccer, which most of the planet knows as football, is said to be the world game. Perhaps Gwendolyn Oxenham and three of her friends decided to look for pickup soccer games in 25 countries around the globe because she was trying to demonstrate that the game deserved that distinction. Finding the Game tells the story of the 3 years Oxenham spent in the company of temporary teammates from a prison in Bolivia to a construction site in South Africa and an airport security checkpoint in Iran. The author joins me now from Costa Mesa, California. Gwendolyn, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you so much for having me.
You describe yourself as part of a, quote, four-person team determined to find pickup soccer games all over the world. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the other members of the team.
We all more or less went to college together, and Ferg and I played on the women's soccer team at Duke. And, you know, your college career ends, and we didn't really want it to be over. And having played in some incredible pickup games in random situations, it occurred to us that this was the most powerful form of the game, yet one no one paid attention to. You know, it's able to create this intimacy between strangers. And so we wanted to go looking for pickup games in many different locales.
And you had two other teammates.
Yes. So Ryan and Rebecca both went to Duke with me. And then Luke was my boyfriend. And we actually met playing pickup soccer.
At some of your destinations, the people you met knew exactly what you were after when you said you were looking for pickup soccer games, even though that term was different in different countries. But it wasn't always the case. Where did you encounter the most confusion regarding what you and your partners were looking for?
Probably our first stop, Trinidad. We had no idea that pickup was a word that didn't translate. So the idea that we were looking for games that don't matter and that don't count and that no one watches was really hard for people to understand initially. So every country we landed in, we had to sort of search for whatever the term was. And it's not even a word you can Google. You can't Google what is pickup soccer in Trinidad. So it would take a while to get, you mean taking a sweat? And then we'd be confused. What do you mean taking a sweat? And then, you know, they would demonstrate what taking a sweat means and just tell us to show up at the field. And every country, it was a hunt to figure out what the word is that they use in that particular spot. And it was also different from city to city sometimes. So it was like a scavenger hunt.
Whose idea was it to play soccer inside a Bolivian prison, and how did that work out?
Rebecca and I had both read an article about San Pedro Prison and what an unconventional place it is, where essentially the prisoners run the prison and the guards make sure that no one gets out, but they never go on the inside. So we had read that they bet a lot of money on soccer games and that there was a strong level of play. So we went up to them, and Rebecca Ferguson and Luke were the Spanish speakers. So they went and talked to the prisoners and held our little postcard and tried to find the nuances of language to ask them if we could wander into a prison.
Any concern once that game got underway? Because I understand some of the opposition and some of your teammates were going to be in that prison for a long time.
Yes. I mean, there were guys who were telling us, yep, we're in for murder. But once you play, you're just another player. And it's the one space where no matter what your economic background is or your race or religion, it all goes away and you're just playing a game and sharing goal celebrations and playing by the same rules. And I think that's what's so awesome about pickup soccer.
When you got to Austria, you got suckered into buying counterfeit tickets to a European championship game. You never saw the game. You could have been arrested, but that story had a kind of a happy ending in terms of the pickup game that you did get to see, right?
Right. So we're feeling like total dummies. Only Americans would know not to watch out for counterfeit tickets. So we're leaving the police station, and as we're leaving, we see the ambulance drivers and the paramedics playing in a pickup game in their shiny suits and boots, and it seems so symbolic. You know, the one time we go trying to chase a big professional game where we're returned to the spot we belong, watching once again enchanted by the smaller game outside of the big game.
In the chapter about pickup soccer in Africa, you write, "The best part of this trip around the world is witnessing the motivations." Tell us a little bit about that.
Everyone is playing for a different reason. When you're young, you're playing for the chance. When you're old, you're playing to remember how good you used to be. There's so much pride involved in so many situations. I mean, we played with moonshine brewers in Kenya, and they told us, you know, when you're down here, everybody thinks you're just another drunk. But then when you get to the field, you can show them that you're a player. And that there's so many different reasons why people come to the field. And it was awesome. And to witness the motivations. And sometimes people can tell you right away why they play. But other times it's kind of too personal to put in words. And you just see it in the way they play and on in their expressions on their face.
Toward the end of Finding the Game, you write about your visit to Iran, where you were concerned that your film might be confiscated. Would you please read for us the story of your encounter with a couple of the security people at the airport in Tehran after one of them has picked up the soccer ball with which you've been traveling?
Sure. She spins the ball in her hands, and I wait to hear what we've done wrong. She walks briskly around the side of the x-ray machine and then tosses the ball to the other security guard, who attempts to trap it with her chador-engulfed thigh. Here we are in the Tehran airport, and two 50-year-old women, government security officials, are juggling the ball and giggling. I feel like I'm in a surreal version of that Nike commercial where the Brazilian national team does tricks through the terminal. All over the world, from the ghettos of Argentina to the border control in Togo, the ball has done this. It has the magnetizing effect of a cute puppy, people stopping to touch it, to play with it, to smile at you as if you are lucky.
That would seem to me to be the ultimate demonstration of soccer and playing with a soccer ball as a way for strangers, even potentially hostile strangers, to communicate and enjoy each other's company.
Definitely. We were very, very nervous. We're in the Iran airport. We're Americans. We have video cameras, and we're sneaking tapes through security. It was a high-pressure situation, and when she reached for me, I thought, oh, no, what is about to happen? And here she reaches for the ball, just like everyone else does, and was happy to play.
Gwendolyn, I understand that you're now teaching English, and I can't help but wonder whether life today seems to you impossibly tame after the adventures that you describe in Finding the Game.
Well, I have found my own pickup game. It's not that different. I play with a bunch of Iranian guys. It's kind of ironic that I traveled all the way to Iran when I could have just stayed in my own city and played with Iranians here, and I've still got my pickup game fix. Twice a week.
Gwendolyn Oxenham is the author of Finding the Game, 3 years, 25 countries, and the search for pickup soccer. The book is published by St. Martin's Press, and the author joined me from Costa Mesa, California. Gwendolyn, thank you very, very much for speaking with me.
Oh, thank you so much. It was very nice.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabue. Our technical director is John Perotti. We had help this week from Paul Vikas. Our intern is Dana Haddock. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view our photo galleries, please visit onlyagame.org. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word comes from New York Times reporter Richard Sandomir, who told me that Daniel and Ozzy Silna made a lot of money in the polyester business.
Who didn't in the 70s?
Well, not me. I didn't wear any either. Well, maybe a little. I feel a little peeled. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR.